What's happening, everybody? Thanks for joining on today, March 8th. It is a Monday, a brand new week ahead of us, and this is episode number 581. Great guest today. I finally got to sit down with one of my oldest friends, Mr. Eric Peterson, guitarist, songwriter of Testament, and his second band, Dragon Lord. Lots of metal talk today, and I've been wanting to have this guy on for years. I can't even tell you how far back I go with these guys, Chuck, Alex, and Eric. Straight up family, man. Bay Area metal family. Testament, big part of my life, my whole life. Just so many classic Bay Area metal records from this band. Practice What You Preach, The New Order, Souls of Black, The Legacy, The Ritual. Their latest record is fantastic, Titans of Creation. And 35 years. Let that ring into your ears, my friends. 35 years playing metal. Congrats to these guys. Absolute soldiers of metal. Before I do get into the episode, I do want to say thank you to all my new Patreoners, patreon.com/DeanDelRay. Shout out to Andrew Brooks, who joined on, Gucciano Getnick, Noel Coopersmith, Jason Jacob, and I do want to give a special shout out to Noel Coopersmith, because this guy went above and beyond. Thank you, brother, on that donation. Patreon.com/DeanDelRay. 102 bonus episodes, and every week a Zoom fest. You get to hang out with me. We talk about records, music, movies, podcasting, comedy, whatever. It's fun. Also, this week, Friday and Saturday, I will be in Des Moines, Iowa. It's my first road date in a year. It's going to be interesting to get on an airplane, fly across country 5 hours, and do some stand-up. First time in a year, something that I did every day of my life for 10 years straight, and then nothing for a year. So this is going to be interesting and fun. And please, if you live out in Des Moines, Iowa, don't hit me with the catch you next time, because there may not be a next time, man. Come out and see me run some comedy for you guys. That's Teehees this week, Friday and Saturday. 3 shows. All right, I love all you guys. You know it. Thank you also for your support on my second podcast, The Grail, and also my YouTube channel, Dean Del Rey. It's been very, very nice to watch this stuff grow. I do love doing the second podcast, The Grail. I can't thank you guys enough for the cool emails telling me you love the show. Here we go. Let's get into some metal talk. Time for metal talk on a Monday. Metal Monday. Metal Maniacs. Here he is. The candles are lit for Mr. Eric Peterson of Testament. All right, here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk, coming to you with an old friend of mine, Eric Peterson from Testament and Dragon Lord. How are you, buddy?
Man, how you doing, Del?
I'm good. We had some false starts, but it's fucking, I'm glad it's working out, man. And where are you at? Sacramento, right?
Sacramento, yeah. Where are you at? LA?
Yep, Los Angeles.
Right on.
How long you been in Sac?
Probably like about 10 years now, a little over 10 years.
Yeah. How do you like it?
It's cool. I mean, at first I was like, this is just part-time, but I've grown to like, you know, the being an hour away from Tahoe, and it's like an hour and a half to San Francisco. When I noticed what I liked about it was when I go back to the Bay, it's just so congested and it's a lot more green out here. I mean, it's cool. I like both, but you know, I get homesick, but I like it.
Yeah. I can't remember. Where'd you grow up? Oakland, Bay, which part of the Bay Area?
I grew up in Lafayette, California, and Alameda.
Oh, wow.
So more when I was younger in Lafayette, and then like high school, Alameda.
At what point do you start playing guitar, and who is it for you? Is it Kiss? I always ask people this because it seems like everybody, it's either Kiss or Zeppelin when I have them on.
I mean, Zeppelin when I was like really young because of my parents, but you know, like buying my own records was definitely Kiss. Air drumming to 100,000 years. You know, the crazy stereos back then too, you know, looked like part of, you know, furniture, TVs on top of it.
Yeah, those old big giant wood consoles where it had the turntable, the receiver in it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my mom's. And then when I moved to my dad's, when I moved to Lafayette, he had like the Sansui, you know, the $2,500 turntable and just a big speaker, you know, late 70s. When everything was huge and just weighed a ton. And that was a lot of fun because I was listening to, started listening to the Scorpions and Judas Priest, Killing Machine, Love Drive, Tokyo Tapes, Angel Witch, you know, just starting to get into the more the new wave of British heavy metal stuff. And Kiss, I still rock and Kiss.
Oh, yeah. Well, you go Kiss, like Cedric Bixler said, the gateway drug to rock. And then it just fucking goes, you know. And I specifically remember, you know, it goes Kiss, then it goes Ted Nugent,
then
it goes AC/DC and Journey, Infinity Record,
the girlfriend,
Cheap Trick, and then here comes Saxon, Judas Priest. And that stuff, and then it's off to the races, you know.
And then you go, you know, Van Halen, and I mean, for Kiss was like you said was the gateway. But then you have your different characters, you know. You have Paul Stanley. Okay, you're going to go more towards, you know, glam rock, or you know. Then there's Gene Simmons, you know. So I was more of a Gene Simmons fan, you know. So it was more the darker stuff that I was into. So.
Oh, I was so into Gene. That Alive 2 photo is the greatest photo ever, you know?
The Alive 2, yeah, I got this one right here.
I see it.
This is the Alive 1.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I love it.
I know, it's so cool.
You ever met Gene?
No, I have not met Gene.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, Chuck did. Chuck went and wrote with him. We're writing their Low record. And we're in LA, and one of our management hooked him up to go work on a song that he was still working on in the studio. Chuck came back so frustrated. He's like, Gene said metal's dead or rock's dead. And then, okay, let's start. But, you know, rock's dead. And I'm just like, what?
Gene's been saying that for fucking 40 years. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love him, though. He's great. The guy's so great.
Maybe it's just giving a pun. I don't know.
Yeah. I think Gene has got a lot of tongue in cheek that people miss. You know, he's throwing out some comedy and people take it all for fucking, what it is. You hear what Gene said? And he's probably sitting back at his house going, these fucking fools, you know?
Yeah. Scorpio jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cynical.
I don't know if you saw Murder in the Front Row. It really is a wild film of our past, of watching that, of that weird organic scene that exploded in the Bay Area. But before that, you and I were playing music when we were kids. You know, everybody's always talking about these bands when they're young, like Greta Van Fleet or something. Look how young they are. I'm like, you don't understand. All the bands back then were that age. That's just the age of a band. Anybody in 25 was considered all these old rockers, you know?
Yeah. 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 We've been around for 35 years. So you look back at pictures, you're like, geez, I was like a baby. Yeah. I mean, the newer bands, you know, it's cool to see that band in particular, just the moves the guitar player makes. So, you know, Jimmy Page, like, damn. But a lot of people don't know that, you know, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool to see. It's not a bad guitar player to take, you know, imagery from.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard that. So what kicks you into guitar? Is it Kiss, or how do you get your first guitar? Is it paper route? All that. What is it with you?
So my first guitar I bought in Lafayette at a store that had mostly like saxophones and trumpets, and they had like, you know, some acoustics, you know, the neck, the strings are up the neck like this far. And there was one Memphis Les Paul, who was a Sunburst. And I was like, wow, you know. So I think I did a lot of yard work to save up my dad. But he made me learn on acoustic first, you know, take lessons. I took lessons there, this guitar player, and he, God, I forgot his name now. But he was the guitar player from the I Love Lucy show.
Wow, really?
From Ricky's band, yeah. William Tapia, that's his name.
Well, that's cool as shit. He was living out in the Bay Area, huh?
Yeah, Lafayette. And but I only took like maybe 4 or 5 lessons from him. You know, I learned, you know, all the notes and stuff. But when I finally, what made me leave was I brought the Draw the Line Aerosmith book in, where he's looking at him, he's going to teach me Draw the Line, right? And so I kind of figured it out, but he was like, no, it's da 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 da, you know, kind of. And I'm like, no, it goes da da na 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 na, you know. And he slapped my hand, and I'm like, whoa. And I was, you know, I'm a little kid. I'm like, okay. So I'm doing it again, and he's like, he hit my hand again, and I was just like, nah.
Wow.
I wanted him to, you know, I wish I had like my Walkman. I don't think Walkmans were out yet, but if I could have played it for him, you know, like you can hear it. It doesn't go da 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 da, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's just looking at the charted music.
And well, he's an old jazz guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever that kind of, you know, big band music.
So you get out of there and just start digging in your bedroom every day after school, start learning all the riffs and everything?
Jumping around in front of the mirror mostly. Yeah, learning like Hellbent for Leather stuff, Ted Nugent, you know, Rock Bottom, UFO. So I was listening to a lot of live records back then when I first started. Unleashed in the East, Tokyo Tapes, Strangers in the Night, Kiss Alive, Kiss Alive 2, Mahogany Rush.
If You Want Blood.
If You Want Blood, yeah. Aerosmith Bootleg, you know, all those records are just, you know, Double Live Gonzo.
I love that Mahogany Rush one, man.
God.
His speech on that, for all of you that were there and those are here now.
Yeah.
Purple Haze, you know, it's so great.
For those of you who did this a long time ago.
Yeah.
For those of you that wanted to get down, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. It's so great, right?
And yeah, I was just listening to that record last night, too.
What a record, man. And that weird story of like, you know, he was in a coma and Jimmy came into his body and he came out and now he's this good on guitar. Do you remember that weird myth?
No, I never read that one.
Yeah, that was weird, man. Wow. I love it. I saw him. Did you see him at any of the Day in the Greens or anything?
Yeah, that was one of my first concerts was Day in the Green with them. And it was AC/DC with Bon Scott.
Yeah.
I went to go see Aerosmith. And Ted Nugent, you know, coming swinging down on the rope, lands, you know, gets a guitar. It's like, wow. 8th grade, just like, whoa.
What a showman that guy was, right? With the fake boulders. He's throwing them out in the crowd.
That was crazy. But Frank Marino, though, was badass. But you know what really blew me? I mean, I had known AC/DC, but I was more really into Aerosmith. But just Bon Scott, man, his presence. I was just like, look, I was in the front row. So I was just like looking up going, wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. Like people were like Angus. And I was looking at Bon like, look at this dude. He had tattoos. No one had him back then. And he's like, all right, is the song coming out called Highway to Hell? And you're like, what the fuck? You know, this
just his stance. He was like a rock, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, and then Angus is the crazy one all going all around him. But Bon just stood there and just the confidence, you know, like, wow.
Fucking next level, right? After that, do you go like, I've got to get a band going? Or what's your first band? Like a junior high school type of band playing covers?
So the only other band I did was, it was called Black Wrath. But we played at the 8th grade talent show. And we played, what did we play? We played Good Bad Company's, God, what's that song that back then?
Bad Company? Bad Company.
No, I'll think of it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, we played a Bad Company song. And that was fun. But we just kind of did that for fun. And I think the first band that I got in was Legacy.
Yeah, that was my first nuts. Band. Yeah, that's nuts. That's and how it. Old are you at that time?
Just right out of high school, like 18, 19.
And you're the only original guy now, but Legacy had other guys in what you read an ad in like BAM or something to audition. How does this happen?
Well, No, because Alex and Chuck are original from the record.
Right, from the record. I get
that. Yeah, yeah. So, but before that, it was me, my cousin Derek, and Louie.
Louie
Clemente.
Yeah.
And then Zet and Greg Christian.
Right, right.
That was the original lineup right there.
Right. And how did you know these guys? Just from the neighborhood, Louie out there?
So Louie... So we're sitting, me and Derek are sitting at this park, and everybody knew Eric and Derek, you know, we would sit at this park and the big old boom box listening, turning everybody on to the heavy stuff. You know, we'd all be sitting at the park in the circle and, you know, seniors, you know, smoking pot, you know, smoking cigarettes, listening to music. And here comes this like 1970, you know, Cadillac pulling up. And then these two guys get out, and it's Louie and his brother, and they're wearing, you know, denim jackets with all these European patches on them, and we're like, who are these guys? And they come walking up and they're like, what's up, you know, can we get a nickel bag, so, you know, anybody that's got any pot? So that's how we met. And then they asked, you know, is there any, does anybody know any guitar players? And everybody just looked at me and they're all Eric and Derek. Derek was working at the time, so he didn't really jam as much with us, so me and it was more me and Lou in his bedroom. And yeah, that's how it started. You know, I had some riffs. One of the first songs we jammed on was called Secret Agent, but that turned into First Strike is Deadly.
Wow.
So all those parts, you know, were with Lou. And then we played, you know, like some, I think we played Live Wire by Motley Crue. We played Motor Breath by Metallica. We were jamming on that. Yeah. Then we just started writing our own stuff, you know, Curse of Legions of Death. A lot of songs just came really quick. That whole, you know, Derek brought Reign of Terror in. We just see every week we kept adding a song. Yeah, we did that for like a year. You know, we jam on the weekends after work. And I ended up working with Derek at this brewery, at Markstein Brewery in Oakland. And we would take all the bad beer from the pallets, and that was our drum riser. We had so much beer that was our drum riser. So we just had to flip over the curtain, grab some beer, you know, we'd have all the girls in our room and just sitting there drinking beer and playing our three songs that we had and some covers.
That's so cool, man.
And then we finally went, you know, we should probably write some more songs and get a singer.
Yeah.
I tried singing a little bit and I sounded too much like Celtic Frost, you know, and we're like, oh, we need like a singer, you know, because I was just like, you know, we tried the Corpse Paint thing for a little bit and then we're like, nah, I forgot. We ended up getting Zet's brother first.
Really?
Yeah. They call him Bluto. They all had nicknames out there. Zetro, you know, Chuck was the cheese. You know, all of them had nicknames out there. So he was the first one, and he kind of was into it for the first couple of weeks, but then he just started not showing up, and he had got this girlfriend. But he always talked about he had a brother that sang. His brother's like, no, I'm in a band already. You know, we're going to make it. And it was always, yeah, we're going to make it. What does that mean, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so he ended up coming out and watching us, and he was just like, I don't think thrash was really known yet. Because Metallica wasn't signed, they were still just playing club shows. So, I mean, people either knew or they didn't. But Zet was like, when he seen us, he was just like, you know, this, like, people weren't doing that yet. All the bands that were in the room that in the studio, you know, the studio rehearsal place, they were all like playing Judas Priest style or glam, you know, like Jet Boy or Judas Priest was like that's your style. So they'd always, a lot of the bands would always open the door, and they look like older dudes, and a lot of hair and 10 girls with them. And they just look in our room. And here's these little kids, you know, all this beer and like one green light. And we're just playing like this really fast, you know, and they would laugh. Oh, you know, like, and they'd bring people in, like point at them, like, you know, they would just open our door and like watch us and just laugh, you know, we're playing fast. Like, what is this? You know, we ended up befriending a lot of them, and they liked it. And they would come in and started like, this is actually pretty cool, because we kept getting better and better and better. Our first show, there was another band that was like us there, but they were a punk band. They were called Rebels and Infidels.
Oh, wow.
And they were a lot older, but they were really into what they did. And they were kind of like social unrest, GBH kind of stuff. And that was our first show. We played with the Rebels and Infidels. And I remember Chuck and Willie Lang. Willie was in Lost Rocket at the time. They came to check out because they were friends with Zet, you know, all the Dublin guys. They came to our show, and I think there was about maybe 40 people there.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the whole crowd was for Rebels and Infidels, just a bunch of punk, you know, punk people, punk vibe, whatever. But people were slamming to us, you know, it was really cool because we were playing fast. And so Willie had offered us to play a show coming up like the next weekend at the Stone. And we were just like, he said, you guys want to, you know, play with the big boys? And we're like, yeah, it'd be cool. We did that show. It was Lost Rocket, this new band from LA called Slayer.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and we're like, Slayer's playing? We knew who they were, you know, from Trape Chating. And, you know, they're another band that, you know, they, I remember seeing them at a small club at Ruthie's actually, because we roadied for a friend's band. They're called Black Leather. Black Leather was either opening or Slayer was supporting. I forgot. There was like 12 people at the show. You know, no one knew who they were yet. So it was really cool. I remember them hooking it up. Jeff's drinking his Heinekens, fixing his amp. Just all those, you know, little memories, you know, that we had. And
what was that Stone gig like?
So that was, yeah. So get back to that. That was like, I was like dry heaving because it was like packed. Lost Rocket packed the house back then.
Yeah.
They were like, they're going to make it, you know, they're going to be huge.
Oh yeah.
They,
City's going to burn. People love yeah. that tune. It was catchy.
This is before the record came out. This is, and there was so much hope. It was really funny because backstage, you know, we had known who Slayer was. And I remember Dave Lombardo was walking back and forth. You know, we had our dressing room and he's just walking back, you know, and he just kept saying chemical warfare. And then we're like, what's that? He's like, oh, it's our new song, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, it was really cool. They had this new song called Chemical Warfare. And yeah, it was really a really good time. But yeah, so before we went on, I threw up so many times. I was so nervous. I didn't know about taking a shot or anything yet, you know, before.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. I mean, it's fucking nerve wracking. It's like the Stone is full. You're in San Francisco. There's people out there.
We didn't got no sound check. You know, it's the chord, you know, I mean, I was shaking like, cause the curtain's closed. And then when the curtain opened up, it's like,
oh yeah. 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 Man, you're trying to hold your guitar and you got the nerves of for the butterflies and shit. It's not, I mean, that used to happen to me, but the first song, like I would almost be throwing up before I even sang the verse. And then once you got in, you were in, but man, that shit is next level. I don't even think you can even get to that fear anymore. Like I skydived and I felt it like, whoa, this is like first gig shit. But man, you know,
it's definitely that kind of adrenaline, you know, and you're just, it almost like, I remember like I just clammed up, like I couldn't even move my hands, but just, I looked over at Zet and he was just had his tongue out and then I forgot. And we just got lost in the music and we played four songs. We played, I think it was Secret Agent. Wasn't First Strike Daily yet. That's a weird name. I don't know why we called it that. Curse of the Legions of Death, Reign of Terror, and then we played The Legacy.
Wow.
So we had that. Legacy was the first song that we had because I wrote that like in 10th grade.
Wow. Look at those tunes you were writing in high school, dude.
That's a little kid, you know, yeah.
Yeah, just yeah. Ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga, you know, yeah. Like just killing it with the riffs. I mean,
you know what it was, I mean, I was really, really like into Iron Maiden and like everybody else in Judas Priest, but I was roading for a friend's band. They were called Roulette.
Yeah, were they a Fremont band?
Alameda.
Yeah, Alameda. I remember Roulette.
They're really good, man. But their whole trip was red and black. Kind of like Striper, you know, but they were red and black. And the Striper wasn't in the band yet. So, or maybe they were, I don't know.
Right.
So I ended up roading for them and they were doing a show. Again, it was with Lost Rocket and this other new band from LA. And I remember seeing the flyer said imported from LA, Metallica.
Oh.
And I remember being on the phone with someone on the payphone. It was at the old Waldorf. And as soon as I heard, I gotta go, man. This band, you know, I went up there and I was just like, Lars is like the animal, you know?
Yeah.
And I just sat there and was just sitting there going, and everybody's holding on to each other and just headbanging. And I went home and wrote like four songs that week, you know, and I knew what I wanted to do now. Cause I didn't, everything was Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, you know, Van Halen, Motley Crue, everybody. It was those, that's all there was really.
Right. And that was considered the heaviest, you know,
yeah.
It really was. I mean,
but Metallica just was like, they were my new favorite band. So I got their demo. I ended up buying it from James, I think. I forgot how I got it.
Love that.
Yeah.
Want to buy my demo?
He probably burp.
Yeah.
What about my demo?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, fucking. Yeah, fucking buy the demo.
God damn it! Buy my demo. I don't know, but yeah. So that was really inspiring. Metallica was a big inspiration for sure. And then taking everything else in, you know, still listening to, you know, Angel of Death by Angel Witch.
Yeah. And Merciful Fate, dude. Merciful Fate.
Yeah, that was a huge influence.
Dude, I mean, I'm in the record vault. I'm hearing CUNT and I'm like, God damn, this is beyond heavy. This is spooky and weird, you know?
And getting there from Rohnert Park, you had to take the bus, right? The
Golden Gate Transit.
Yeah. Because I used to take the Alameda County, the AC bus to San Francisco transfer to go up to Rohnert Park.
Yeah.
So that was like a day event.
You go down to Rohnert Park Expressway, and you get on at Albertsons, and then it goes fucking through Cotati, Petaluma, turns off in Novato. Back then, the freeway didn't go. You had to go through Novato.
Yeah, you went off. Yeah. You'd get right off the freeway, you know.
Then Santa Fe 4th Street right there, then back on a stop right there at the Sausalito Flea Market, over the bridge, up Lombard, past Jack and Box. You get off at the top, and then you walk up the hill to Polk Street, and then there it was, man.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I used to go there all the time.
Yeah. And that was in the peak of kidnappers and fucking serial killers and shit.
Dude, Polk Street? Wasn't it on Polk Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, just that was a dangerous street, you know?
Oh, yeah, because it was like, it was gay and everything, but it was also like, you know, old gangster shit going on in there, too, like junkies and shit. It was all crazy, man.
Needles on the ground.
Yeah.
Piss, totally. Fucking beer, you know.
Fucking half-dead people all over the place. That shit was wild, man.
Even over by the Warfield, it's still like that a little bit, you know?
Oh,
we used to do gigs to park our cars. They're like, fuck, we're going to park, man.
I know. Behind the Warfield is the loin. That's the gnarliest place in the city on the planet, you know?
It's crazy.
I remember we'd go eat at Original Joe's and it'd be like, whoa, look at this guy. People just running around with knives and shit. That's real.
Wasn't Original Joe's more by the stone?
Well, they had one there. That was Original Joe's Jr. Across the street from the Stone. Okay. And then Original Joe's was behind the Warfield. It burned down. And then they had one in San Jose, I think, that just closed. But those were cool.
Did you ever go to Toulon's Vietnamese restaurant right down the street from the Warfield?
No.
Oh, man, Toulon's. You got to go there next time you're in the city.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And that place is just dirty and it's always crowded and you walk in, it's like, of course, you know, now it's like, I don't think you can even go in there. It's so much different now. Holy crap.
Oh, it's so different. Now it's like vegan and you know, no GMOs and techies are in there like, I want some almond milk with my fucking Vietnam food. It's crazy.
That's funny.
Today's episode is brought to you by Honey. You ask, what is Honey? Well, I'm going to tell you right now. We all shop online and we've all seen those promo codes, but we don't have one handy. Thanks to Honey, manual searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds in your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. I'm telling you, I used this and scored some big savings on some denim recently. Let me tell you exactly how it works. When you check out, the Honey button drops down and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons and then boom, they find one and discount city. I'm telling you. I use it all the time. I can't believe it. I needed this years ago, and it is free. So this is a no-brainer, Del Razors. Get on it. Honey has found its over 17 million members over $2 billion in savings. Get with it right now. Here's how you do it. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Delray. Now, let me tell you again real quick, because you got to use this. joinhoney.com/Delray. It helps you. It helps the podcast. It helps me. I love this promo code finder. I'm telling you, we all shop at home and we want some sweet deals. Join honey.com/Delray. Those days of hanging at the Stone are pretty goddamn magical, right? I mean, you know, we're seeing like, you know, Roadrunner and Le Mans, but then you're seeing Metallica and Slayer and Merciful Fate and all that stuff was going on all at the same time. And you just go see it all, right?
That was the best going there. I mean, just, you know, running into, you first walk in and it's just crowded and then there's the bar.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Metallica's hanging out. Lars is totally drunk, annihilated every time I saw him.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, I got there too, you know, and I just can just picture the whole, you know, everybody that was there. It was like a scene. And then that same scene would go to Ruthie's after the Stone, because I think the Stone turned into like a dance place after,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. They'd have late night dancing there all night.
Yeah.
And then the MAB across the street. Did you ever play the MAB in Legacy?
Yeah. Yeah, we did our video there for Over the Wall.
Oh, is that where that was done?
Yeah.
You remember Ness?
No, I mean,
he was the owner.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I probably knew him, but.
Yeah.
So after the Stone, we were just, it was a big weight off the shoulders, you know, like we did it, you know. And I think after that, we got a good response. And we ended up opening for Omen. Remember that band Omen?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then they just started rolling in. It's like Heathen came out and just everybody, I think Metallica, you know, at that point was signed. When they left, then it was like, you know, then other people started, then it was Exodus, you know, and then it was us. And then, you know, all these bands kept making it, leaving it, leaving. Then there was no scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of it had to do with, and I don't think they touched on it in Murder in the Front Row, but when the 89 earthquake happens and it drops down that off ramp off the Bay Bridge, where you could go back and forth from the Omni and the Stone in like 20 minutes, that once that thing's crumbled, you know, you don't have the direct access to both clubs. So then people are like, I don't want to go to the city. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You got to get off here and find parking. So that really affected a lot of it. But also, I don't think something brewing that fucking hot can last forever. It was just so piping. You know, here you are, you've got these bands that are crushing it. And then they're going to Europe and playing to, you know, 60,000 people. And then they're coming back and just on the road for years at a time, like nonstop grinding. So the bands weren't there,
yeah.
You know, that had a lot to do with it. Like, oh, Metallica's gone. Exodus is gone. Testament's on tour. You know, I think Law's Rocket broke up or something. So everything was kind of gone. Slayer, you know, lived in L.A., but they were touring, and Anthrax was from New York. So it was really, oh, we're out working now. This is our jobs.
Yeah, I mean, our whole goal was just, you know, we wanted to headline the Stone. You know, we just want to headline Ruthie's and have people here like Exodus does, or like Metallica or Slayer or whatever. I remember seeing Hell Awaits at the Stone and it wasn't even sold out. Like they had a hard time in the very beginning, but once it hit, it hit. But you know, the whole second wave, I'm of course Slayer is Slayer, but yeah, I mean, it was really weird just that whole beginning. But then we just kind of climbed up so quickly. And when our first record came out, it was just a blur because it was like 87, 88, 89, 90.
Oh God. I mean, a record after record. It was incredible.
Yeah. And it was a year apart and we managed to do these big tours, the US and Europe, and then Japan would come in later from practice. And then South America came in, but we still kept putting out records every year for up to five, you know, like five records. Ritual, I think, took like a year and a half though. That one was a little bit longer.
When Zet leaves, do you feel like, oh, fuck, it's over? Or were you like kind of depressed for a little bit? Or were you like, we're going to find another dude immediately. It's going to be kick ass. What was your feeling on that?
Well, we had done the demo. We had so much recognition. Our record, our demo was almost, you know, put into the album category of bands. You know, wasn't like a lot of European magazines were viewing it like a record. And that was really weird and cool at the same time. I think, when Zet quit, we were getting so tight and had, you know, like this, all these like 10 killer songs. And we really had built up. We were just like, what? So when he quit, he had actually suggested Chuck. And I knew Chuck from parties in Dublin. So I was just like, wow, that guy's big and scary. You know, I don't know. I mean, we wanted this other guy from L.A.
Who was it?
It was the singer of Abattoir.
Right. I don't know him, but what was his style?
He kind of looked like Chuck. He had like that. I think he was Mexican or American Indian. I think he was Mexican. He had the big hair.
But what about vocal style? And how did you know about him?
I really don't remember at this point. And it was you know, on the heavier side.
Right.
And it would have been cool, but, you know, we tried Chuck out and I worked with Chuck a lot on it. You know, like gave him, he really didn't understand our music, you know, the fast pace. He was just like, so I had to like, you know, kind of do some mimicking for him, which he got a kick out of because, you know, doing the drums and the guitar, everything. And you see my hand, it's like, oh, he had this melodicness, you know, more of like a Rob Halford kind of raspy. And so that was more like Bon Scott, you know, more just, yeah. And, but you know, once Chuck got in and, you know, we got the song sound, we were like, man, this sounds really good.
Oh, when I heard Over the Wall with Chuck,
yeah,
I was like, oh, this is fucking Over the Wall. You know, you're just like, and he was just, you know, he had the half mic stand, like and just fucking up there, you know, and you're like, God, this guy is fucking killer. Like, you know,
when me and Lou went to go see him, to, you know, before we decided to invite him in, he was in a band called Guilt, and they were more, you know, I would say more close to Van Halen rather than glam. They were playing with a lot of glam bands. They were more like a Montrose, you know, even though they had the Van Halen vibe. But Chuck, I remember him coming out, you know, trench coat, breaking Budweiser beer bottles over, you know, people's heads.
Whoa.
So I think that was kind of a stage thing. He had his friends get up there and then he would hit him over the head. And it would just, these, you know, they're the tall ones, those bottles. And they used to break really easy. We were just like, man, this guy's, he does not belong in that band. Because the rest of the guys are all. And so, yeah, we're like, all right, well, let's get this guy. And I mean, there you go.
Well, it's once he gets in, and of course, Alex starts to blossom into this fucking insane player. And Louie, he had a thing, man. You know, he looked good and he's like, you know, and you guys had, you just had it, man. That was it. Like we would open for you guys and you guys would just kill. I remember we did the Omni with you guys. I think it was a video shoot or record release. And it was just, you know, we just watched the band and go, this band's going.
It was so loud, right?
Oh, man. Oh, God damn it. Everything was on 10.
No other bands would bring a sound system. We would bring like, you know, what you would use at the Civic Center or something, you know. Chuck was all about, we got to have, you know. So we would just bring in this massive PA and just, I mean, people were like, after the show, they're like, really loud. But yeah, the Omni, that was another place that turned into a cool place to hang out. I remember me and Chuck driving around looking for a place to play besides the Stone or Ruthie's. And Nady had just bought this club, the Omni. We went in there and it was like, you know, the ballroom. We walk in and there's like all this, like, looked like a storage place.
Yeah.
And it was, there was, no one was having gigs there. So we ended up working out a deal that we were going to do a show there. And it turned into a really cool place to hang out.
Oh, it was great. It was great, man. They had the downstairs bar. As long as you were inside, the outside was horrible, but you had the downstairs bar. And then the backstage was just an
huge,
old, huge, but not glamorous at all. Just a junkyard of storage. It was all out in there. I mean, you know, people jumping off the second tier into the thing, and the stage had that camera pit. You know, if you went too far, you'd fall into it.
There's the stairs, you know, going up like a kind of a high school gymnasium vibe. Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, man.
You remember, we talked about it right before we went on here. The Guerneville River Theater also had a...
That was fun.
Yeah, that had a lot to do with finding out you could go out into the boonies, felt like a road gig, and really learn your stage moves, as cheesy as this sounds, really figure out who you were out there, you know?
Yeah, and what was cool about that gig was there was those cabins that you would rent in the back.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, and that was badass, because then it was like, you know, redwoods, and you're just like in the woods, you know, like it was our Norway.
Yeah, yep.
So, you know, we would have those parties back there, and people would have to turn on their car lights to hang out because it was so black.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah. And it would flood once a year for like 6 weeks. It would be closed. Yeah. So there's always that scent of mildew in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The club would get all watered out. Yeah. That's crazy.
I fucking saw Cro-Mags in there on the Age of Coral tour too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I seen Exodus there. You guys, us. Those were all legacy shows too.
Yeah. Yeah. So wild. What do you remember when you finally get this Atlantic record deal? Because that's kind of a big deal. Was it Kevin Williamson that signed you? Who was it?
So Maria Ferrer, Megaforce signed us. And it's kind of cool that when Zet quit, cause we had kind of some deal stuff in place. But when he quit, it kind of threw us back maybe 6 months. We had to get Chuck and then do some more shows to introduce him. But Atlantic or Megaforce ended up working out a deal with Atlantic, where Atlantic was going to distribute their, you know, their music. And part of the deal was that they get to pick 5 bands that they're going to, you know, sign with Megaforce.
Right.
So we ended up getting on that deal. So we were, you know, basically on Atlantic Megaforce. So we were on a major label and an independent label, the independent label for the love. And then the distribution, you know, especially around the rest of the world, like when we went to Japan, it was Atlantic or East West. And in Europe, it was Atlantic. So we were on a major label. That was really cool. You know, we weren't on an independent label, which was also a cool thing too, but to have the power of, you know, of a bigger label. So that was really cool, man. I mean, and we got lucky. I mean, we just at the right place, right time. Our first tour was with Anthrax, and Anthrax was like at the height of, you know, they just did Spreading the Disease, and just Among the Living came out. That was like their
masterpiece.
Yeah, we have arrived.
Yeah,
we learned a lot from those guys. And we followed them around in the States in the summer in a blue van. Yeah, and they had a bus. You know, one day we're gonna get a bus. Yeah. So that they invited us to do the European tour, and that was more like in the fall, winter, and we got our first bus, and it was just that feeling, you know, walking on there after all the dues that we paid. You know, it's kind of cool that we drove around in a van in the summer, stinking,
feeling it, being it, real, grinding,
you know, grinding, you know? And getting the feeling of, you know, we deserve this,
earning it,
yeah,
yeah.
So we definitely earned what we had. We weren't. Even though it was a new type of music, new genre, which that's, you know, being at the right place, right time, you know, being a little bit lucky, but we still paid our dues, you know?
Absolutely. Let's talk about that Japan tour. The first one, here we are, Bay Area guys. I always looked at Metallica as just these worldly figures. After their first couple European tours, you were like, they would come home, they're drinking Jaeger. You're like, what are these guys, are different. They've been places. You know what I'm saying? We've been in the Bay Area or LA. Woo, we've traveled. But to go to Japan is just so unleashed in the East, live in Budokan to your head, to finally go there. What was that like? What were the venues? Who were the bands? All that stuff.
So it's a little bit different in Japan. At least when we first went there, a lot of bands didn't get to go there because they just, you know, they would be very selective of who they were going to bring. We ended up luckily getting, our promoter was like the Bill Graham over there. It was Udo.
Oh yeah, Udo. He's so famous.
Yeah. So we ended
Mr.
up.
Mr. Udo.
Yeah. Yeah. And the experience that he gave us, you know, like Korean barbecue, you know, the food. Yeah, I'm thinking of the food, of course, but just the crowd. Like we played Osaka and Tokyo, and the crowd, there wasn't a barrier, it was like a string or a rope. And this one guy that was running the show, the crowd knew him. He would just come out and look at them, like, and they knew not to go over the rope.
Wow.
And some people did. And they, you know, I don't know what happened to them. I mean, they got killed or something in the back.
Yeah, yeah. Thrown in prison for life.
Handed a knife.
Yeah. I remember I was there with the Stones and I was looking out. I've got a photo from the top of the stage where I climbed way up to the top. And it's just, it looks almost like a COVID concert now. It was just sections.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So that was the surprise that after we ate, Udo was like, we have a special surprise for you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get to the Tokyo Dome and we're going to see the fucking Stones.
Whoa.
We were like, you know, we're walking up, we kept walking. We were like second row, third row.
Wow.
You know, and I think it was the Steel Wheels tour.
Yeah, 89, 90. So that'd be like 90. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah,
so we were just like, no way, you know.
Dude, that's got to be crazy. Here you are in Japan.
And the crowd, you know, the fans there, they were there to greet us, you know, and it was just like, we had heard about the Mania vibe, but there was, you know, posters and, you know, all these letters and gifts, and it was just overwhelming. Like, wow.
Yeah. Testament dolls and shit they made.
Yeah. This is the best place ever. I remember me and Lou would just walk out of our room and there'd be a bunch of people waiting down there. They wouldn't come up and say hi. They just kind of would giggle and we'd be walking and look back. There's like 10 girls following us and like laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. How many gigs did you play over there?
So we would do two at a time. I think we did two nights. We did two nights in Tokyo and like one in Osaka. But the first time we went there was for practice. And that was a little bit rougher. Osaka was a little rough. Tokyo was really good, but it was still like overwhelming. Like, wow. You know, we take the bullet train. The people that are outside of the bullet train in Osaka are waving goodbye to us. And then when we pull up to Tokyo, the same people are there greeting us. And we're like, what? How did they get here before us?
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. That still baffles me because we left. And we get there and they're there. So I'm like, what?
I can't say this enough, man. I just feel like you and Testament, of course, but you are so underrated in the thrash world. I mean, if you look at what you accomplished, the songs you wrote and where this band has gone 35 years, you know, I just feel like it was, I had to talk to you. I was like, wait, I got to get Eric on, man. What the fuck? I've known this guy since we were in the, you know, 10th grade or something.
Yeah, so, that's been so forever. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think now, definitely in the beginning, I mean, as far as like that whole, you know, underrated, I've heard that from a lot of people, but in the beginning, I think since there's two guitar players,
yeah,
Alex was more of the shredder.
Of course.
And I was more the rhythm guy and, you know, writing.
Yeah, you're the Malcolm.
Yeah. So, you know, it got kind of like, and I remember feeling it a little bit like, you know, like it wasn't like Tipton and KK or, you know, Adrian and Murray. It was more like, it was like Skolnick. Yeah. And I think once he left and came back and when Murphy joined the band, you know, James is like, he was a fan. He's like, how come you don't play more solos? You know? And so me and him would kind of start doing these trade-off things. And when Alex came back, I was more like, you know, I don't want to just play rhythm. I'm playing solos now. So on the last records that we've done with Alex, I've been doing a lot more solos, and especially the last two records. I'm kind of doing, you know, a little bit like half.
Right.
And it gives the band a more depth, I think. And it's not taken away. I'm not stepping on Alex's shoes because he's Alex Skolnick. You know, he does his own thing. And my element comes in and it all works together now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. You definitely have a sound too, which is really hard to achieve in everybody. You know, it seems like everything's been done. The tones have all been done. But when Testament and you come out of the speakers, you know, especially those first four records, you're like, oh, this is Testament. That was the great thing of Exodus, Testament, Anthrax, Slayer, Megadeth. They all sounded different. You know,
yeah,
they had their sound, and you definitely had your sound. Early on, once you get rid of that Memphis, what's your first real guitar?
So my this after I wish I never sold it, but my dad made me sell it to get, you know, so I ended up getting a black Strat.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted it to be like Tipton's, you know, Unleash the East. He's all, so I got that. I bought it at Leo's Music in Oakland. See, what was the next one after that?
So your dad makes you sell it in order to get another guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. It wasn't like, yo, we're going to get you another guitar. It's like, no, you got to sell this one and get another one. And
do you remember what year that Strat was?
Man, it was definitely like eighth, ninth grade. So 82, oh, maybe. Wow. It was like a 1980 guitar.
Wow. Maple or Rosewood?
Rosewood.
Wow.
Yeah. I could never keep it in tune either. When I did the bar dive, I didn't know what I was doing yet, you know?
Yeah. Did you ever get a Charvel or Jackson?
No, I went from that to, I think I went from that to BC Rich. I ended up getting the Black Bitch. Seeing Joe Perry with the red one.
Oh, yeah, on the back of my bootleg. Oh.
Yeah. So I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
So then I got a Mockingbird too, and that was like blood red. And I was into that for a while, but then I went back to Gibson and I started playing Les Pauls. And then Explorers came in. I was playing Explorers. And then I went to ESP. Yeah. But now I've been with Dean Guitars, which is my favorite. I've been with them for like 22 years. I think I'm like the oldest and longest endorser there right now.
Holy shit, 22 years.
Yeah, it was 1997, the Demonic Tour.
Wow.
I got my first guitar with them.
And what shape, a V?
I think I got the Star Body.
Oh, the Star Body.
The ML. Yeah, it's a black ML.
Love it. Like
dime bags.
Yeah, dime bag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. I was talking to Grover Jackson about the history of Dean for a minute. And Dean, I guess, was out of Chicago or whatever. Then they went out of business. Some guy bought them. And then that kind of was in limbo. And that's why Dimebag went to Washburn, because this Grover Jackson was working at Washburn at the time. And they just basically made the Dimebag Dean at Washburn. Wild stories.
I ended up being at a NAMM show. And I remember their booth was on a corner, and it was this little, you know, this little shop. And they had, you know, they weren't what they were now. Because Dean, apparently Dean Zielinski,
yeah,
had left the company. And so I ended up talking to some, you know, really corporate kind of guy, and I ended up getting kind of a deal with them. And then Dean Zielinski came back, and you know, we had kind of a cool relationship. And I remember him asking me, you know, can I get a hold of Dimebag somehow to get him back? I don't really remember how that worked out, but he ended up getting him back. And then Dean sold it again. You know, he went public with the company, and that's where Elliot came in.
Right. And where are they out of now?
And then Elliot passed away a couple years ago, and his son's running it now.
Are they in Chicago?
They're in, no, they're in Florida.
Oh, Florida. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where they're at. And that's where the headquarters has always been, but Dean was from Chicago.
Right. You remember the early Deans and Hamers? They were so unreal, the quality.
That's what got me into it. A lot of people are like, you know, Dimebag, and I'm like, well, of course, that's killer. But for me, it was like the Circus magazines with the Doobie Brothers,
yeah,
and the Cars.
The Cars.
You know, just seeing the Cadillac.
Yeah, the Cadillac, man.
And the ML and the Doobie Brothers. I think they had the Explorers.
Yep.
Yeah. They call them the Z. Sorry. There's even a picture somewhere out there with Ace Frehley with an Explorer. It looks really cool. I mean, that guitar would look really cool on Ace Frehley back then, because it was so spacey looking and just shapy, and you know.
Yeah, I remember Billy from Flame had the V, Dean V, and it was the SG colored red, that stained red,
yeah, with
the brass hardware, and it was just a phenomenal guitar. You're, yeah, like, whoa, this thing, I mean, it felt like it was just like next level.
It was up there with Gibson. I mean, even that, it was like over Gibson, you know, it was, yeah, just like really, really well made. And all their USA stuff is like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. Great shit. Let's talk a little bit about Dragon Lord. So you've got this kind of death metal band, two records out now, right? I listened to it. I was like, wow.
Three records. Wow,
three.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're singing and
screaming.
I put it on. I was like, oh yeah, fucking, this is great. Now, how does this happen?
During the Demonic Tour and the Gathering Tour, which is like between 97 and 2000, you know, we're doing, you know, in stores, and someone turns me on to, I think it's Emperor at Welkin's at Dusk.
Right.
And I'm just kind of, I don't know, I caught the bug, you know, the Norwegian black metal bug. I mean, I always liked Merciful Fate and Celtic Frost and Angel Witch and Bathory and stuff like that. But getting turned on to the newer bands like Dim U Borgir and Old Man's Child and a lot of that kind of stuff, and, you know, Cradle of Filth later. And this is not death metal. This is death, but then it's the next level, which is black metal.
Right, so black metal. Right.
Yeah, Norwegian black metal.
I get it, yeah.
I just was, you know, really, really into it. And it was right before we wrote the Gathering record. And I just had all these other songs. And I remember playing the songs to Dave Lombardo, because Dave was writing with me on the Gathering. And he was like, you should do like a project, man. You should do something. Because you know, I did the demo for Legions of the Dead, and I was singing on it because I wrote the lyrics and the music to that. And that's when he was just like, you know, you should really do this. And I wasn't even thinking of it, but the way he was so excited about it, it gave me the confidence. And I ended up, Steve DiGiorgio hooked me up with a keyboard player guy that he knew, Lyle Livingston. And after we recorded The Gathering, I ended up working with this keyboard guy, and he was totally into that whole Mr. Crowley, you know, really dark.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, that synth fucking... Yeah, deadly shit. Just a, you know, fucking, yeah. Yeah, permanent Mr. Crowley riffs.
Exactly. Through the whole song, you know.
Don Irie. What's his name? Don Irie. He fucking killed it with that demon shit on Ozzy.
It's fucking amazing stuff. But yeah, so just, you know, having that background and just jam, instead of jamming with another guitar player, you know, Lyle's playing like choirs and strings, patches, while I'm going, like, this is really cool. So he would do something, and then I would play over it, and it would just turn dark all the time. So that was a lot of fun. We ended up, at first, it really wasn't a band. I think the second record, we ended up going to Japan and playing some shows, and we did like a little stage tour. I think Dragon Lord's only done like 25 shows in its career, and we've been around since 2000.
Wow, you went to Japan, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I'll send you a clip of that later. You can check it out on YouTube.
Oh, please do, and I'll post it up. Now you guys paint the faces and everything?
Yeah, in the beginning we did it, and we ended up doing it later. I think we were in Seattle, and we had the paint, but a lot of people were like, how could you guys still wear corpse paint, you know?
Yeah, paint. I love it.
Yeah, and Derek's called, I got corpse paint. We ended up, you know, just, we were in backstage, and couple hours before we're about to go on, we just said, let's just do it. So I put it on everybody, and we had the best time, man. We just really turned into that, to Dragon Lord at that point. Face paint, but it was really cool, like getting signed. We signed with Mayhem Fierce Records. They turned into Eagle Rock Bottom.
Oh yeah, I know them.
But so I ended up going to Sweden to do both records and record them both out there. And that was a blast. That was like a lot of fun. So that was a whole different thing. That's what I kind of wanted to do with that. I wanted to do something more fun rather than, you know, record at home, or, you know, Testaments kind of never went away. Well, we did in the beginning, we went to New York, but to go to Sweden, you know, that was a lot of fun. And I'm the ringleader, so I was there the whole time from the beginning to the end. The other guys would come in, leave. You know, by the time the last guy got there, they're all, yeah, man, John says that you're having steak dinners every night, and you know, having sushi and going to these dance clubs and partying. And I'm like, yeah, we're all out of money, man. We got top ramen, you know. Oh, man.
Yeah, we're sharing rooms. Sorry, man. It's over with now.
Yeah. So, yeah, that we did that. But that was a lot of fun. And I remember getting there when I did the first record. I worked with Daniel Bergstrand, who had worked with Stuck Mojo and Strapping Young Lad, producer, and ended up working with In Flames and, you know, bands like that, At the Gates. He's also, I got your demos, but I haven't heard your vocals yet. Yeah. And I go, I got all the lyrics, you know, we're all good. He's all, well, can you add a tape of, you know, like your style? And I go, I've never sang them yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great. Cause you can hear in your head what you want it to be, right?
Yeah. I knew what I wanted to do. And I knew, like Chuck always called me the Wicked Witch. Like my backup vocals always had this big, and I felt confident when I did my backups. I was just like, you know, my, even the our front of house guy always had me up like, yeah, you know, the Wicked Witch, you know, so I knew, you know, and then listening to, you know, the bands that I was into, Emperor and Jimmy Obergeer, you know, I was like modeling my vocals kind of after that. So they were just like, you know, wait, what? You never sang before. Yeah. And I'm like, I know what I want to do. Let's go in there. You know, I go in there. I got my little half pint of Jack, get my, do my warm-ups, learning my warm-ups from Chuck, you know, just, I'm going to do what Chuck does. So, you know, I go in there and I mean, within, you know, a couple takes, they were like, nice. Yeah. Yeah. This is killer. And, but I think I got to like the third song, fourth song, we went back and did the first two again. Cause I had found kind of a sound.
Right. I get it.
And they were having a lot of fun with me. Cause I, they'll try this and I would do it. And they're like, yeah. So it was a lot of fun. Cause I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't know. I mean, what if I went there and I couldn't do it, you know?
Oh yeah. Classic.
You know,
you have to find a guy in the street. Hey, can you sing some, fucking metal in here?
Yeah, man, my voice could have cracked, you know, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, luckily I knew about the warming up thing. You know, drinking the Jack gave me the, you know, took away the fears and made me more, I don't know, crazy, you know, but the making the lyrics seem real, what I was talking about, going into character. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
What have you been doing to keep busy during COVID?
God, probably what everybody's doing, like cooking a lot, watching a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I think I'm like, you know, doing the binge thing.
Yeah. Did you watch Night Stalker, Doc?
No, I just seen that. I'm going to check that out.
Ooh, man. That's pretty wicked. You might write a whole record on that.
Yeah.
Dragon Lord Night Stalker.
On the New Testament record, we have a song about him.
Oh, on the 2020 record?
Yeah.
Which song is it?
Oh, City of Angels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Titans of Creation, 2020 Testament record. I'm going to listen to that. I listened to the record a bunch, but I didn't realize, you know, when you find out, oh, it's about Night Stalker, then you go back. I got to hear that.
Yeah. The lyrics are really, really cool. That was like the last song that was completed by Chuck. Cause I remember when he was in the studio singing, he's like, all right, I'm almost done. And I'm like, there's still like four songs left. He's all, nope. And then we go there. We're like, you know, there's this song. It's like, I don't like that song. You know, and we're like, dude, this song's, you know, I'm like, this song's so cool. It's different. It's slow. It's, you know, it's like Lady Evil by Sabbath or something. And it's just got that really dun, 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 you know, droney. So it's just shits everywhere. Eric, I don't, you know, it's got riffs everywhere. There's no, I think he would always go, well, show me. So I'd go in there and, you know, scream, do some stuff, whatever. Then he'd be like, okay, so you probably could sing over it, but, you know, I think he was down in LA writing with Del James. Right.
Yep.
And Del James called me up and he's all, hey, so we got lyrics, you know, to that song. He goes, you're going to fucking love it. And so he read them to me and then Chuck on the phone and goes, yeah, it's pretty cool, but, you know. So when we came up there, when he sang it, me and Juan, the producer, we were just like, fuck. Like, who knew? Like, that song was almost going to get X-nayed.
Damn.
And it ended up being, it's one of the best songs on the record. I mean, they're all great songs, but for me, that one's special because it's really cool. And, it, you know, Sirius Radio ended up playing it a lot. You know, that wasn't one that we put out as a single, but I heard it in my car on Liquid Metal. And it's like, damn. It's almost 8 minutes long, too.
Damn.
But really, really good lyrics, really. It really fits the mood of the song.
I got to go back and listen to that. Are you guys working on a new record or is it Dragon Lord? What are you doing?
I'm working on some New Testament stuff right now.
Oh, rad.
I'm excited about that. You know, I mean, there's another 6 months, 7 months before we're maybe going to play some festivals. So hopefully that all works out. You know, praying that we can all go back and people can start going to shows again. We'll see what happens. But I figure, you know, the whole last year is just like waiting and wondering and pondering. And I think right around November, I think a lot of people are probably going, man, I better start figuring out what am I going to do? Or.
Yep. So what do you think the plans are going to be? Write some tunes and then do another Testament record in 2021?
For me, just to plan, my plan is just to have some music in case, you know, like, you know, summer's canceled.
Yeah. Yep. I gotcha. Then you have something to do.
All right, let's jam. I got you know, a bunch of new riffs. I got some stuff now, but I'm just kind of getting into that, putting that hat on, like, okay.
Yeah.
It's perfect weather too. It's raining out and my backyard's like really woodsy. So to sit out here and I got everything downstairs. I've done the last Dragon Lord record and the last two Testament records in this room.
Really?
Yeah. I have Logic and, you know, a DI, just do it all there. Email everything over to the producer, reamps it all, boom.
That's fucking great.
Just get some coffee, come down here, start jamming. I don't have to drive from Sac all the way to Oakland. You know, it's a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? It was great to catch up with you.
You too, man.
I have not talked to you in years, and there was a period where we were just always around. I remember I'd go over and you'd go, dude, I got some Testament tour shirts for you. Stop by. And I'd go, but you know, from Europe and shit. And I'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah. I got one upstairs right now still.
That's
and
awesome.
You'd give me these shirts and I would have all the Testament. And I'd give you shirts and just those days are magical. And I'm so glad that we're all still alive so we can sit here and talk about those days. Cause a lot of people are gone and we're relatively young, but not really.
we're heading towards the 60s. I'm just like, what?
I know, man. And, you know, I just try to stay as healthy as I can now and see how long I can sit out here on this planet and see what's next. It's pretty wild.
We got the kid attitude, you know, and just growing up with this kind of music and I don't know, man. I feel like a kid still.
it's really those Day in the Greens that I sit around and think about a lot and be like, yeah, those were some fucking time. I'm not a guy that lives in the past, but I do love that we grew up in the Bay Area where it was just this melting pot of different music and different clubs and different, you know, styles and all, you know, Santana to Dead Kennedys to Testament to Vane to, you know, just anything.
Yeah. We were really lucky to have grown up in the Bay Area in that period. And just like you said, seeing all those bands and, I remember being in high school and seeing like Y&T, you know, play at my high school. You know, they'd come in, they'd play, but they were so pro, you know, and they were wearing spandex and silver and just badass. Y&T, man.
Oh. Y&T, they had wirelesses. You're like, oh, fucking Dave Menichetti and Joey Alves. Look at these guys. Dun, 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 you know?
And like 5 hours later, you know, earlier, we were, you know, playing basketball, you know, in PE.
Yeah.
And now it's nighttime and I'm back here and I've already drank, you know, some schnapps and watching Y&T just rock. That was killer.
God, I have Dave Menichetti on the show and I talked to him 4 hours. It was monumental to me because what I learned from him and early Ranger, pre Night Ranger. And all of those bands, like I said, Roadrunner, Vicious Rumors. Those were kind of the bands when we were in, you know, ninth grade. They'd play keg parties and you'd be like, what the fuck?
Jeff Thorpe,
you know,
rocking still.
Oh yeah. God damn. So great, man. Great to talk to you. Give everybody your Instagram.
It's Eric Peterson Official.
Okay.
And that's kind of the only thing I'm doing. I have there's some Facebooks with, you know, I think Eric Peterson Official, but I'm not really running those. I check them once in a while, but I'm more active on Instagram.
All right. Everybody join and follow him right away. And I can't wait to hear what you guys got next. And I love you guys, Alex, you and Chuck, fucking straight family right there, man. It's great.
No doubt. All right. Take
Thank
care,
you
bro.
So much for doing it, man. And have a great weekend.
You too, man. Take care.
Candles lit, buddy.
Later.